On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
We are joined, as we always are at this time of a Sunday, by Donald Fallon to go through some of the aspects of history. Donald, we're going to do that thing where we don't talk about the history of right now, we're talking about something in the news, but we do the thing where at the end of the year we tend to talk about future forthcoming anniversaries. Mm-hmm. And the notes that you've sent in for this one are a great one, because your notes on the brief that you sent in, they open with the quote, "God help those who get in our way, for we mean business," which are the words of William Craig, the founder of the Unionist Vanguard, because next year, 2022, marks the 50th anniversary of a short-lived political movement, I think, which split from the UUP, which was more mainstream at the time. But the split did shape politics in the North and did frighten Dublin and London for a few dramatic years. David Trimble, who later became a Nobel Peace Laureate, was one of those who marched with a movement that was anything but peaceful. And next year, as we move away from the decade of centenaries, we're going to be moving to a series of difficult anniversaries, which is why we said we'd get you to come in and spread some festive cheer by talking about future commemorations of terrorism and strife.
The ghost of 1972 is coming.
The ghost of many Christmases past. Good to have you in, though, and thank you for coming in. Next year, we are likely to be concerned with a much more recent history than we have been up till now.
Yeah, literally, I would say 365 days, give or take, ago, we looked at 2021, which was, of course, a big year in the decade of centenaries. Mm. We're saying goodbye to it now. Next year, we move into, I suppose, a more recent history than we've been commemorating up to this point. And I think centenaries, generally speaking, they're rarely too divisive in a real sense. I know we had RIC Gate right before COVID and your controversies around NI 100, the centenary of the North. But the remove of 100 years really does take the bite out of the past, you know. And next year, historically speaking, it's marked by a number of living anniversaries, I would say 50
yes,
anniversaries,
yeah. things that are in literal living memory,
and protagonists are still there, and you know, in many ways, for that reason, they offer tremendous opportunity for understanding and dialogue, arguably more than a century ago. But Ulster history sits in a peculiar place. I mean, just 2 weeks ago we had news headlines around that Gerry Adams BBC defamation case.
Yeah. Mm.
And then in recent weeks, there was the really strange suggestion of an official history of the Troubles, as if it was a kind of heritage site.
Official in kind of inverted commas, because, of course, the idea of having an officially agreed narrative about all of that is totally wishful.
Yeah, and impossible. Impossible. The idea of a government-commissioned history of the Troubles raised more than a few eyebrows. And, you know, succinct as ever, Ferreter in the Irish Times said that how to present and control historical accounts raises crucial questions about personal experience, privileged access to records, and contemporary political agendas. In other words, it's pretty much impossible that any such project could please everyone, or, you know, perhaps anyone.
1972 was, as far as bad years go, and it's terrible that we live in such a recent history that we can almost rank the years by how bad they were, but it's probably fair to say that 1972 was among the worst of the entire conflict.
If not the worst year. And it will open next year with the anniversary of Bloody Sunday, the 50th anniversary of that event, which, you know, will lead to a lot of commemoration, political and cultural. But in the broader picture, 1972 is a year of unprecedented suffering in the North. 479 lives are lost to violence. Almost 5,000 people are injured. And it's the year when this new organisation begins appearing on the streets, Vanguard. They were uniformed, they were mobilised, and they had very striking imagery, very striking aesthetics. I mean, I sent you in a copy of the logo.
Which you don't usually do, but it was worth sending in because it's really, really striking. You might tweet it when we get out in a couple minutes' time. It's very striking.
Red hand within a V, framed by a crown, striking posters that were everywhere, and a movement that had massive, massive appeal to young loyalists who were frightened, as many people were frightened in the Ulster of 1972, including a very fresh-faced David Trimble.
Yeah, now this wasn't a party at first, but it was this kind of broader idea about trying to unite loyalism and loyalists.
Ulster Vanguard was kind of like a political pressure group. You know, it came out of and it eventually went back into the UUP. It's kind of funny this is part of the story of the UUP, because we think of the UUP today as the more moderate wing, if you will, of Ulster loyalism or Ulster unionism. But they were terrified at the proposed suspension of Stormont and direct rule from London. And they basically believed that if Stormont was to be folded, it would be surrendering to the IRA.
Okay.
So the charismatic figurehead is this guy, William Craig, former Stormont minister, politician with a flair for very dramatic speeches. And at one of the first meetings of Vanguard in the Ormond Park in Belfast, he tells the crowd that we must build up the dossiers on the men and women who are a menace to this country, because one day, ladies and gentlemen, if the politicians fail, it may be our job to liquidate the enemy. Extraordinary words.
Liquidate is some verb.
Liquidate the enemy from a former Stormont minister.
He wasn't exactly a new face. This is a guy who had actually been in government.
Craig was a World War II RAF veteran. He was also a solicitor with no fear of the legal ramifications anything he said. And he was a real darling, actually, of the loyalist right, because he'd basically been forced to resign from his ministerial post a few years earlier because of his really hardline opposition to the civil rights movement in the 1960s. Mm. And, you know, he tapped into this fear that they're taking Stormont away to appease the IRA.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the irony is, of course, the DUP talk about collapsing Stormont, but at the time, the feeling among loyalism was that this would be a surrender. And what makes Vanguard really interesting from the get-go is how it looks. You know, Garrett Mulvenna, the historian, has written about how Craig often entered Vanguard rallies in an open-top car flanked by motorcycle outriders. Can you imagine this sight?
There's a touch of the World War II leaders about that. I think there's surely some photography about Mussolini coming in
yes,
motorcades like that.
And the motorbikes remain a sight at all the kind of Vanguard rallies, literally, you know, revving up the crowd. Mm. And it wasn't just that some people reference Craig as like a would-be Carson, you know, the latest loyalist messiah, as Garrett puts it. But he viewed himself in that way too. And one MP, a unionist nonetheless, looks at it all and says, I don't like this. There's a certain Hitlerian type figure here walking up and down the lines, inspecting his so-called stormtroopers.
So that's the... yikes. God, this is very uplifting Stephen's Day Radio, isn't it? Looking at the archive, the crowds that he's walking through, they do have a kind of a certain look and style. And bizarrely, there's... maybe some people have hinted at what might have influenced them, which is actually a contemporary pop band.
Yeah, so what is this guy Craig actually inspecting in the Ulster of 1972? Like, when Edward Carson walks through a line of men, you know, in 1914, 1915, he walks through lines of armed men, some of whom would go on and die at the Battle of the Somme. This guy Craig is walking through the so-called tartan gangs, young working class Protestant street gangs.
So, but he's inspecting vigilantes.
He's inspecting teenage gangs of vigilantes, and they wear tartan. Some people joke that they wore tartan looking back because they had some great love for the Bay City Rollers. Tartan was all the rage among teenagers in the 1970s. But their breakthrough was still to come. I mean, the Bay City Rollers don't become a chart hit till 74. And they actually wear tartan, these gangs of loyalist kids. Because 3 Scottish soldiers are killed at the hands of the IRA in 1971. So it's like a commemorative thing, these kids. And when you look at them, they've got the denim jacket style of the day, the tartan scarves, the patches, the hair. It's like a bizarre kind of youth subculture. But they were capable of inflicting very, very real damage on the streets. And as one of the tartan gang remembered, we turned up at those rallies in our denims and our tartan scarves. We were lined up like soldiers and inspected. And you had the feeling of high esteem. People were saying, these lads are our future.
The mention there of high esteem, it's that, you know, there's a great monologue in the West Wing about why kids join gangs in black parts of America, and it's all because, you know, that it gives you that sense of esteem. It's a familial belonging. It's a future. It's a camaraderie. It's a respect.
Part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah, and you can understand in a certain way why they do it. Vanguard were an odd thing because they were loyalists who didn't trust London. And I suppose in a lot of ways that they were loyal not to the crown necessarily or to Britain, but they were loyal only to Ulster.
It sounds kind of weird. Yeah, they're not so much British loyalists as kind of Ulster nationalists, you might say.
Yeah.
You know, they even talk about how some of them are open to the idea of an independent Northern Ireland. Mm. You know, if they fall out with London, they're willing to govern themselves from Belfast. They won't be governed from Dublin. But the idea of an independent Northern Ireland is something some of them are interested in. And, you know, the manifesto talks about this idea of a uniquely Ulster culture. You know, what is at stake, they say, as throughout generations of continuous challenge, is the maintenance of a distinct way of life and culture, by which they mean their culture. Mm. So this whole people they talk about means Ulster people. And that's a really peculiar tradition of Ulster loyalism that is really, really hostile to London too.
Yeah.
And, you know, their loyalty is to Britain is second to this belief in the sovereign power of Ulster.
Yeah, which is weird, because then if you're supposed to be this kind of splinter from the Ulster Unionists, and we have this very, certainly a very 21st century conception that unionism is about, no, we are loyal to Britain. We are part of the same peoples. We're part of the same state. This is where we belong. And that actually 50 years ago, they were like, well, no, we belong to ourselves. And if it means that we're aligned to them, then so be it. The movement grows and then it makes its way into Westminster, which is bizarrely enough. They get invited there by a few renegade Tories who are members or representatives of the government that they're so disloyal.
The meetings get bigger and bigger. The rallies are enormous. And eventually Craig is invited to Westminster. And it sounds insane to us, but in October 72, he's hosted in Westminster by the Conservative Monday Club, which still exists. It's a kind of right-wing pressure group within the Tories. And we always hear about these things in the Labour Party. You know, we always hear about these kind of strange little Trotskyist fringe groups in the British Labour Party. But we rarely hear about these kind of curious right-wing groups within the Tories.
You have the likes of the ERG or sort of the COVID research group, but you don't have like people who are so overt as this would be. Yeah.
And eventually in 2001, which is not all that long ago, the Tory leadership kind of forces a number of MPs to resign from this thing, the Monday Club. It was kind of an unwanted ally in the party.
Yeah.
But back in 72, they bring this guy, Craig Ulster Vanguard, to Westminster. And he tells them, I mean, this is a guy talking in Westminster, in the centre of British democracy. We are prepared to come out and shoot and kill. I'm prepared to come out and shoot and kill. Let's put the bluff aside. I'm prepared to kill, and those behind me will have my full support. And can you imagine MPs applauding something like that? The alarm bells are going off in London, Belfast and Dublin.
And it would be wrong to present Vanguard as just being street gangs as well, because there was a very noticeable... you might call it a middle-class dimension to it, including someone who then, as we mentioned in the introduction, would go on to become a future political leader of the Six Counties.
The Tartan gangs are like the angry young face of kind of the Shankill Road and working-class loyalist kids. Mm. But then you have these respectable faces. You have a young lecturer from Queen's University by the name of David Trimble. There are men of God, like the Reverend Roy McGee. Mm. And Craig, later when he's asked about this, says about David Trimble, David was typical of many young professional men that made themselves available. It was the new blood from that element that transformed the situation. Trimble actually runs for the party in the assembly election 73. He comes last in his constituency, but he's surely the only winner of the Nobel Prize for Peace who can claim such a thing.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you go back far enough, there's probably a lot of few people who have checkered past, and maybe the story is about the redemption rather than their lifelong record. What brings Vanguard down, and I suppose this is typical of so much of the story of Northern Ireland, is debate around the whole concept of power sharing.
In time, the first item on the agenda, of course, is the split, and Vanguard does split.
It's just as true in every corner of the island. It doesn't matter what tradition you belong to.
It's not unique to anyone on this island. But some in the party, including Craig, they've kind of become increasingly open to the idea that there could be someday some kind of voluntary coalition between unionism and the SDLP. Mm. And this kind of makes sense.
It does make sense, because if their idea is that they are loyal to Ulster, then you'll share Ulster with other Ulstermen, even if they're not of your creed.
Exactly. Even if you don't like them. You know, it's better to be ruled by an Ulsterman you don't like than by, you know, a Tory in the smoking rooms of Downing Street. That's probably how they see it. And a lot of them actually drift back into the party they'd left, the UUP. And yeah, as we said earlier, that's so weird, because we see them now as the more moderate party. Mm. So it's this weird skeleton in the UUP's historic closet. But of course, in Irish politics, there are very few empty closets. And that's true in Stormont, and it's true in Leinster House as well. So what we're going into now, next year, is a kind of strange year of reflection on all of this. Because 1972, it's a remarkable year for Ulster and for Ireland. The sight of motorcycle corteges, tartan gangs, talk of a bloody coup from Vanguard. That all sounds innocent enough now when we look at the scale of the violence that followed. Yeah. But I think in that violence unfolding, Vanguard is a key part of the turning up of the temperature, if you will, in the province and beyond. And crucially and sadly, a lot of these young guys who, you know, were wearing tartan scarves and you know, getting in street fights, it was kind of like a gateway drug for them. You know, it led them ultimately into paramilitarism. And the stylish young teens of the Tartan Boys, you know, one day your Bay City Roller, one day is your paramilitary rank and filer the next.
On that cheery note, look, there's no point in trying to get away from it, because it is contemporary history, and it's something that we're going to hear an awful lot about, I'm sure, in the coming months as well, because we have the anniversary, of course, of Bloody Sunday, the 50 year commemoration of that in a couple of weeks' time. So it's something we're going to hear a lot about, so we might as well just chin up and face it as it is. Donald Fallon, thank you for that, and thank you for everything all year. Hopefully we'll have your guidance for a lot of the other contemporary things to come throughout next year, as we deal with all of those anniversaries and of course all the other little oddball bits of history that we find along the way.
The news cycle flings at us.
Isn't it just so good? The news gods just keep throwing things at us.
People getting pardoned for killings 100 years ago and stuff.
We'll have to get you in sometime to explain John Twist, because a lot of people still don't understand what's going on there. Donald Fallon, author of Henry Edda Street from Tenement to Suburbia and presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this year, and Happy New Year to you and yours.
On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.